Is there a monopoly in electronic books?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Connecticut's Attorney General today announced an investigation into possible anti-competitive pricing of e-books by Amazon and Apple. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us now to scroll through this story a bit. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Bill.
So whether there's a monopoly or not, aren't e-books relatively cheap?
Well, yeah, compared to a lot of new hardcovers, they're a bargain, mostly under $15 at the big online retail sites like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But they're more expensive than they used to be. When this e-reader technology was just coming out and no one knew if people would want to read a book on a screen, most e-books were priced lower, under $10. Then a few months ago, conveniently, this was just before Apple launched its new iPad, five big publishers made a deal with Apple and Amazon. That resulted in higher ebook prices, and the publishers are guaranteed a bigger cut of the sales.
Mm-hmm. And is that what might cross the antitrust laws?
Well, a number of government antitrust busters seem to think so. Connecticut and also Texas are investigating. So are the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department. Now, in their defense, the publishers say that if prices are any lower, they'll actually lose money publishing ebooks, and fewer new titles would then come out. On the other hand, you know, ebook sales are booming. Amazon's now selling more ebooks than hardcovers. E-readers are flying off the shelves. All that looks to the antitrust folks like a pretty healthy market, and it suggests that the publishers don't need these deals to keep prices high and to keep growing their business.
Okay, I'm logging you off now. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The U.S. government says it is disappointed by the move to ban BlackBerry's internet services in the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. The ban will apply to business travelers and tourists as well. The BBC's Mark Gregory reports other countries also have some security concerns about the BlackBerry.
The United Arab Emirates says it needs to view BlackBerry's wireless data to improve security and fight terrorism. The government insists it's only asking for the same concessions as BlackBerry already gives the US and other countries. Marek Pawłowski keeps tabs on the mobile phone industry for Mex Consulting. He says BlackBerry maker Research in Motion, or RIM, is used to these types of threats.
It's worth remembering that RIM is not particularly new to these problems because of the way in which it structures its service. It has faced these kind of concerns before, and yet still the business has continued to grow.
Whatever deal RIM makes with foreign governments is unlikely ever to be known in full. And despite its statements about the UAE, analysts say the US government can probably read things on your BlackBerry even it won't admit to. In London, I'm the BBC's Mark Gregory for Marketplace.
We got some corporate earnings in just this morning. Profits at Procter & Gamble were down 12% for the maker of Tide and Pampers. Archer Daniels Midland said profits surged. ADM is a major corn and soybean processor and ethanol maker. And MillerCoors, the beer people, they say profits rose 28% in the last 3 months. Let's do the numbers. Stocks are lower in Europe this morning. They were mostly higher in Asia. I call that ain't got no swing qualifier. Yesterday, though, on Wall Street, in one session, stocks there pulled themselves from the red to the black for 2010. The S&P 500 index shot up 2.2%, so it's now up 1% for this year. For the Dow Industrials, that meant a 208-point gain. The close was 10,674.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Yellow Book 360, offering a spectrum of marketing tools for small businesses designed to go beyond yellow. More at yellowbook360.com. And by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
A project to turn human waste into fertilizer pellets has run into opposition, and not because of the ick factor, because of cost. The Chicago project has been in the works since 2000. It is just starting to churn out the pellets for commercial use. Marketplace's sustainability reporter, Adrian Hill, did some sniffing around and joins me now in the studio. Hi, Adrian.
Good morning.
Did I just say that Chicago is recycling human waste?
You did, and you're right. Chicago's not alone. Lots of municipalities all over the country, all over the world, actually recycle human and industrial waste, heavily treated, into little pellets that are fertilizer.
Well, I'm glad they're heavily treating it, but even so, is it safe?
The EPA regulates this whole market, and it's called biosolids. And basically, the EPA has set limits for the amount and type of pathogens and chemicals that can be in any of this material that's put on the land. We are talking about some serious stuff here, like arsenic, lead, mercury. But municipalities need a place to put all this sludge. In the past, they would just dump it out into oceans and lakes, so recycling it is preferable.
And there's somebody to buy it? There's a market for sludge pellets?
You mean you don't want them in your lawn?
Actually, I do use a lot of worm poop on my garden.
Yeah, so maybe this is for you. It turns out there is a big market for this stuff. Milwaukee has been making these pellets since the 20s. You can actually go buy them at the Home Depot. And the Chicago plant, the owners are making 6 semi-trucks full of these pellets every day. They say they're selling all of them for agricultural use. Golf courses love this stuff. Sod farms. Anyone who wants a lawn is really interested in this.
Okay. So there is a market for sludge pellets, but why has the Chicago factory taken some heat in the press lately?
Well, the Chicago facility took years and years to get up and running. The operating costs for this facility are also about 40% higher than the city guessed when it sort of made this contract years ago. That's according to the Chicago Tribune. I talked to the company about why that was. They say it's all energy costs. It's out of their hands. But it does mean taxpayers are on the hook for more than they anticipated. You know, I hate to say this so early in the morning, but the history of sewage treatment and the way this piece of it fits in is fascinating. And I've put some reading up on our website at marketplace.org.
I think we can take it. Marketplace's Adrienne Hale. Thanks.
Thanks.
And finally, while I grew up on Wonder Bread, the Chicago Tribune reports for the first time packaged wheat bread is outselling white bread. Apparently, the greatest thing since sliced bread is now stone ground wheat flour, brown sugar, sunflower seed kernels, and rolled oats. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.